4. Taker of Secrets. The next clue came on the walls. I did not ignore this sign, but neither did I grasp its full implications. From the Journal of Navani Kolin, Iesesus, 1174.
I'm running through water, Dalinar said, coming to himself. He was moving, charging forward. The vision coalesced around him. Warm water splashed his legs. On either side of him, a dozen men with hammers and spears ran through the shallow water. They lifted their legs high with each step, feet back, thighs lifting parallel to the water's surface, like they were marching in a parade. Only no parade had ever been such a mad scramble. Obviously, running that way helped them move through the liquid. He tried to imitate the odd gait.
I'm in the Pure Lake, I think, he said under his breath. Warm water that only comes up to the knees, no signs of land anywhere. It's dusk, though, so I can't see much. People run with me. I don't know if we're running toward something or away from it. Nothing over my shoulder that I can see. These people are obviously soldiers, though the uniforms are antiquated. Leather skirts, bronze helms and breastplates, bare legs and arms.
He looked down at himself.
I'm wearing the same.
Some high lords in Alethkar and Yakaved still used uniforms like this, so he couldn't place the exact era. The modern uses were all calculated revivals by traditionalist commanders who hoped a classical look would inspire their men. In those cases, however, modern steel equipment would be used alongside the antique uniforms, and he didn't see any of that here. Dalinar didn't ask questions. He'd found that playing along with these visions taught him more than it did to stop and demand answers. Running through this water was tough. Though he'd started near the front of the group, he was now lagging behind. The group ran toward some kind of large rock mound ahead, shadowed in the dusk. Maybe this wasn't the Pure Lake. It didn't have rock formations like... That wasn't a rock mound. It was a fortress. Dalinar halted, looking up at the peaked castle-like structure that rose straight from the still lake waters. He'd never seen its like before. Jet black stone. Obsidian? Perhaps this place had been soul-cast.
There's a fortress ahead, he said, continuing forward. It must not still exist. If it did, it would be famous. It looks like it's created entirely from obsidian. Fin-like sides rising toward peaked tips above, towers like arrowheads. Stormfather, it's majestic.
We're approaching another group of soldiers who stand in the water, holding spears wardingly in all directions. There are perhaps a dozen of them. I'm in the company of another dozen, and, yes, there's someone in the middle of them. Shardbearer. Glowing armor. Not just a shardbearer. Radiant. A knight in resplendent shard plate that glowed with a deep red at the joints and in certain markings. Armor did that in the shadow days. This vision was taking place before the recreants. Like all shard plate, the armor was distinctive. With that skirt of chain links, those smooth joints, the bam braces that extended back just so. Storms, that looked like Adolin's armor, though this armor pulled in more at the waist. Female? Dalinar couldn't tell for certain, as the faceplate was down.
Form up!
The knight ordered as Dalinar's group arrived, and he nodded to himself. Yes, female. Dalinar and the other soldiers formed a ring around the knight, weapons outward. Not far off, another group of soldiers with a knight at their center marched through the water.
Why did you call us back?
Asked one of Dalinar's companions.
Cabe thinks he saw something, the knight said. Be alert. Let's move carefully.
The group started away from the fortress in another direction from the one they'd come. Dalinar held his spear outward, sweating at his temples. To his own eyes, he didn't look any different from his normal self. The others, however, would see him as one of their own. He still didn't know terribly much about these visions. The Almighty sent them to him, somehow, but the Almighty was dead, by his own admission. So how did that work?
We're looking for something.
Dalinar said under his breath.
Teams of knights and soldiers have been sent into the night to find something that was spotted.
You all right, new kid?
Asked one of the soldiers to his side.
Fine,
Dalinar said.
Just worried. I mean, I don't even really know what we're looking for.
A spren that doesn't act like it should, the man said. Keep your eyes open. Once Jaanat touches a spren, it acts strange. Call attention to anything you see.
Dalinar nodded, then under his breath repeated the words, hoping that Navani could hear him. He and the soldiers continued their sweep, the knight at their center speaking with... Nobody? She sounded like she was having a conversation, but Dalinar couldn't see or hear anyone else with her. He turned his attention to the surroundings. He'd always wanted to see the center of the Pure Lake, but he'd never had a chance to do much besides visit the border. He'd been unable to find time for a detour in that direction during his last visit to Aesir. The Aesish had always acted surprised that he would want to go to such a place, as they claimed there was nothing there. Dalinar wore some kind of tight shoes on his feet, perhaps to keep him from cutting them on anything hidden by the water. The footing was uneven in places, with holes and ridges he felt, rather than saw. He found himself watching little fish dart this way and that, shadows in the water, and next to them, a face. A face? Dalinar shouted, jumping back, pointing his spear downward.
That was a face! In the water!
River Spren?
The knight asked, stepping up beside him.
It looked like a shadow, Dalinar said. Red eyes.
It's here, then, the knight said. Jaanat's spy. Cabe, run to the checkpoint. The rest of you keep watching. It won't be able to go far without a carrier.
She yanked something off her belt, a small pouch.
There,
Dalinar said, spotting a small red dot in the water. It flowed away from him, swimming like a fish. He charged after it, running as he'd learned earlier. What good would it do to chase a spren, though? You couldn't catch them, not with any method he knew. The others charged behind. Fish scattered away, frightened by Dalinar's splashing.
I'm chasing a spren, Dalinar said under his breath. It's what we've been hunting. It looks a little like a face, a shadowy one, with red eyes. It swims through the water like a fish. Wait, there's another one. Joining it. Larger, like a full figure, easily 6 feet. A swimming person, but like a shadow. It...
Storms!
The knight shouted suddenly.
It brought an escort!
The larger spren twisted, then dove downward in the water, vanishing into the rocky ground. Dalinar stopped, uncertain if he should keep chasing the smaller one or remain here. The others turned and started to run the other way.
Uh-oh.
Dalinar scrambled back as the rocky lake bottom began to shake. He stumbled, splashing down into the water. It was so clear he could see the floor cracking under him, as if something large were pounding against it from beneath.
Come on!
One of the soldiers cried, grabbing him by the arm. Dalinar was pulled to his feet as the cracks below widened. The once still surface of the lake churned and thrashed. The ground jolted, almost tumbling Dalinar off his feet again. Ahead of him, several of the soldiers did fall. The knight stood firm, an enormous shard blade forming in her hands. Dalinar glanced over his shoulder in time to see rock emerging from the water. A long arm. Slender, perhaps 15 feet long, it burst from the water, then slammed back down as if to get a firm purchase on the lake bed. Another arm rose nearby, elbow toward the sky, then they both heaved as if attached to a body doing a push-up. A giant body ripped itself out of the rocky floor. It was like someone had been buried in sand and was now emerging. Water streamed from the creature's ridged and pocked back, which was overgrown with bits of shale bark and submarine fungus. The spren had somehow animated the stone itself. As it stood and twisted about, Dalinar could make out glowing red eyes, like molten rock, set deep in an evil stone face. The body was skeletal, with thin bony limbs and spiky fingers that ended in rocky claws. The chest was a ribcage of stone.
Thunderclast!
Soldiers yelled.
Hammers! Ready hammers!
The knight stood before the rising creature, which stood 30 feet tall, dripping water. A calm, white light began to rise from her. It reminded Dalinar of the light of spheres. Stormlight. She raised her shard blade and charged, stepping through the water with uncanny ease, as if it had no purchase on her. Perhaps it was the strength of shard plate.
"They were created to watch," a voice said from beside him.
Dalinar looked to the soldier who had helped him rise earlier, a long-faced Saleh man with a balding scalp and a wide nose. Dalinar reached down to help the man to his feet. This wasn't how the man had spoken before, but Dalinar recognized the voice. It was the same one that came at the end of most of the visions. The Almighty.
"The night's radiant,"
the Almighty said, standing up beside Dalinar, watching the knight attack the nightmare beast.
"They were a solution, a way to offset the destruction of the desolations. 10 orders of knights founded with the purpose of helping men fight, then rebuild."
Dalinar repeated it, word for word, focused on catching everyone and not on thinking about what they meant. The Almighty turned to him.
"I was surprised when these orders arrived. I did not teach my heralds this. It was the Spren, wishing to imitate what I had given men, who made it possible. You will need to refound them. This is your task. Unite them. Create a fortress that can weather the storm. Vex Odium. Convince him that he can lose and appoint a champion. He will take that chance instead of risking defeat again, as he has suffered so often. This is the best advice I can give you."
Dalinar finished repeating the words. Beyond him, the fight began in earnest. Water splashing, rock grinding. Soldiers approached bearing hammers, and unexpectedly, these men now also glowed with stormlight, though far more faintly.
"You were surprised by the coming of the knights," Dalinar said to the Almighty. "And this force, this enemy, managed to kill you. You were never God. God knows everything. God cannot be killed. So who were you?"
The Almighty did not answer. He couldn't. Dalinar had realized that these visions were some kind of predetermined experience, like a play. The people in them could react to Dalinar like actors who could improvise to an extent. The Almighty himself never did this.
"I will do what I can," Dalinar said. "I will refound them. I will prepare. You have told me many things, but there is one I have figured out on my own. If you could be killed, then the other like you, your enemy, probably can be as well."
The darkness came upon Dalinar. The yelling and splashing faded. Had this vision occurred during a desolation or between? These visions never told him enough. As the darkness evaporated, he found himself lying in a small stone chamber within his complex in the war camps. Navani knelt beside him, clipboard held before her, pen moving as she scribbled.
"Storms, she was beautiful. Mature, lips painted red, hair wound about her head in a complex braid that sparkled with rubies. Blood-red dress."
She looked at him, noting that he was blinking back awake, and smiled.
"It was," he began.
"Hush,"
she said, still writing.
"That last part sounded important."
She wrote for a moment, then finally removed pen from pad, the latter held through the cloth of her sleeve.
"I think I got it all. It's hard when you change languages."
"I changed languages?" he asked.
"At the end. Before you were speaking Saleh. An ancient form of it, certainly, but we have records of that. I hope my translators can make sense of my transcription. My command of that language is rusty. You do need to speak more slowly when you do this, dearest."
"I can be hard in the moment," Dalinar said, rising.
Compared to what he'd felt in the vision, the air here was cold. Rain pelted the room's closed shutters, though he knew from experience that an end to his vision meant that the storm had nearly spent itself. Feeling drained, he walked to a seat beside the wall and settled down. Only he and Navani were in the room. He preferred it that way. Renarin and Adolin waited out the storm nearby, in another room of Dalinar's quarters, and under the watchful eyes of Captain Kaladin and his bridgeman bodyguards. Perhaps he should invite more scholars in to observe his visions. They could all write down his words, then consult to produce the most accurate version. But storms, he had enough trouble with one person watching him in such a state, raving and thrashing on the ground. He believed in the visions, even depended upon them, but that didn't mean it wasn't embarrassing. Navani sat down beside him and wrapped her arms around him.
Was it bad?
This one? No. Not bad. Some running, then some fighting. I didn't participate. The vision ended before I needed to help.
Then why that expression?
I have to refound the Knight's Radiant.
Refound the... But how? What does that even mean?
I don't know. I don't know anything. I only have hints and shadowy threats. Something dangerous is coming, that much is certain. I have to stop it.
She rested her head on his shoulder. He stared at the hearth, which crackled softly, giving the small room a warm glow. This was one of the few hearths that hadn't been converted to the new Fabriel heating devices. He preferred the real fire, though he wouldn't say it to Navani. She worked so hard to bring new Fabriels to them all.
Why are you...
Navani asked.
Why do you have to do this?
Why is one man born a king and another a beggar? Dalinar asked. It is the way of the world.
Is it that easy for you?
Not easy, Dalinar said. But there is no point in demanding answers.
Particularly if the Almighty is dead.
Perhaps he should not have shared that fact with her.
Speaking of just that one idea could brand him a heretic, drive his own ardents from him, give Sadeas a weapon against the throne. If the Almighty was dead, what did Dalinar worship? What did he believe?
We should record your memories of the vision,
Navani said with a sigh, pulling back from him.
While they are fresh.
He nodded. It was important to have a description to match the transcriptions. He began to recount what he'd seen, speaking slowly enough that she could write it all down. He described the lake, the clothing of the men, the strange fortress in the distance. She claimed there were stories of large structures on the Pure Lake, told by some who lived there. Scholars had considered them mythological. Dalinar stood up and paced as he moved on to the description of the unholy thing that had risen from the lake.
It left behind a hole in the lake bed, Dalinar explained. Imagine if you were to outline a body on the floor, then watch that body rip itself free from the ground. Imagine the tactical advantage such a thing would have. Spren move quickly and easily. One could slip in behind battle lines and stand up and start attacking the support staff. That beast's stone body must have been difficult to break. Storms. Shard blades. Makes me wonder if these are the things the weapons were truly designed to fight.
Navani smiled as she wrote.
What?
Dalinar asked, stopping in his pacing.
You are such a soldier.
Yes, and?
And it's endearing,
she said, finishing her writing.
What happened next?
The Almighty spoke to me. He gave her the monologue as best he could remember while he paced in a slow, restful walk. I need more sleep, he thought. He wasn't the youth he'd been 20 years ago, capable of staying up all night with Gavilar, listening with a cup of wine as his brother made plans, then charging to battle the next day full of vigor and hungering for a contest. Once he was done with his narrative, Navani rose, tucking her writing implements away. She'd take what he'd said and have her scholars, well, his scholars, which she'd appropriated, work at matching his Alethi words up with the transcriptions she'd recorded. Though, of course, she'd first remove the lines where he mentioned sensitive issues, such as the Almighty's death. She'd also search for historical references to match his descriptions. Navani liked things neat and quantified. She'd prepared a timeline of all of his visions, trying to piece them into a single narrative.
You're still going to publish the proclamation this week?
She asked. Dalinar nodded. He'd released it to the High Princes a week ago, in private. He'd intended to release it the same day to the camps, but Navani had convinced him that this was the wiser course. News was seeping out, but this would let the High Princes prepare.
The proclamation will go to the public within a few days, he said, before the High Princes can put further pressure on Elokar to retract it.
Navani pursed her lips.
It must be done, Dalinar said.
You're supposed to unite them.
The High Princes are spoiled children, Dalinar said. Changing them will require extreme measures.
If you break the kingdom apart, we'll never unify it.
We'll make certain that it doesn't break.
Navani looked him up and down, then smiled.
I am fond of this more confident you, I must admit. Now, if I could just borrow a bit of that confidence in regards to us.
I am quite confident about us, he said, pulling her close.
Is that so? Because this traveling between the King's Palace and your complex wastes a lot of my time each day. If I were to move my things here, say, into your quarters, think how much more convenient everything will be.
No.
You're confident they won't let us marry Dalinar. So what else are we to do? Is it the morality of the thing? You yourself said that the Almighty was dead.
Something is either right or it's wrong, Dalinar said, feeling stubborn. The Almighty doesn't come into it.
God, Navani said flatly, doesn't come into whether his commands are right or wrong.
Yes.
Careful, Navani said. You're sounding like Yasna. Anyway, if God is dead...
God isn't dead. If the Almighty died, then he was never God, that's all.
She sighed, still close to him. She went up on her toes and kissed him, and not demurely, either. Navani considered demureness for the coy and frivolous. So, a passionate kiss, pressing against his mouth, pushing his head backward, hungering for more. When she pulled away, Dalinar found himself breathless. She smiled at him, then turned and picked up her things. He hadn't noticed her dropping them during the kiss, and then walked to the door.
I am not a patient woman, you realize. I am as spoiled as those High Princes, accustomed to getting what I want.
He snorted. Neither was true. She could be patient, when it suited her. What she meant was that it didn't suit her at the moment. She opened the door, and Captain Kaladin himself peered in, inspecting the room. The bridgeman certainly was earnest.
Watch her as she travels home for the day, soldier, Dalinar said to him.
Kaladin saluted. Navani pushed by him and left without a goodbye, closing the door and leaving Dalinar alone again. Dalinar sighed deeply, then walked to the chair and settled down by the hearth to think. He started awake some time later, the fire having burned out. Storms. Was he falling asleep in the middle of the day now? If only he didn't spend so much time at night tossing and turning, head full of worries and burdens that should never have been his. What had happened to the simple days? His hand on a sword, secure in the knowledge that Gavilar would handle the difficult parts. Dalinar stretched, rising. He needed to go over preparations for releasing the king's proclamation and then see to the new guards. He stopped. The wall of his room bore a series of stark white scratches forming glyphs. They hadn't been there before. 62 days, the glyphs read. Death follows. A short time later, Dalinar stood, straight-backed, hands clasped behind him as he listened to Navani confer with Rushu, one of the Kolin scholars. Adolin stood nearby, inspecting a chunk of white rock that had been found on the floor. It had apparently been pried from the row of ornamental stones rimming the room's window, then used to write the glyphs.
Straight back, head up, Dalinar told himself, even though you want to just slump in that chair.
A leader did not slump. A leader was in control, even when he least felt like he controlled anything. Especially then.
Ah,
said Rushu, a young female ardent with long eyelashes and button-like lips.
Look at the sloppy lines, the improper symmetry. Whoever did this is not practiced with drawing glyphs. They almost spell death wrong. It looks more like broken. And the meaning is vague. Death follows? Or is it follow death? Or 62 days of death and following? Glyphs are imprecise.
Just make me a copy, Rushu, Navani said, and don't speak of this to anyone.
Not even you,
Rushu said, sounding distracted as she wrote. Navani sighed, walking over to Dalinar and Adolin.
She is good at what she does, Navani said softly, but she's a little oblivious sometimes. Anyway, she knows handwriting better than anyone. It's one of her many areas of interest.
Dalinar nodded, bottling his fears. Why would anyone do this? Adolin asked, dropping the rock. Is it some kind of obscure threat?
No, Dalinar said.
Navani met Dalinar's eyes.
Rushu, she said, leave us for a moment.
The woman didn't respond at first, but scuttled out at further prompting. As she opened the door, she revealed members of Bridge 4 outside, led by Captain Kaladin, his expression dark. He'd escorted Navani away, then come back to find this, and then had immediately sent men to check on and retrieve Navani. He obviously considered this lapse his fault, thinking that someone had sneaked into Dalinar's room while he was sleeping. Dalinar waved the captain in. Kaladin hurried over, and hopefully didn't see how Adolin's jaw tightened as he regarded the man. Dalinar had been fighting the Parshendi Shardbearer when Kaladin and Adolin had clashed on the battlefield, but he'd heard talk of their run-in. His son certainly did not like hearing that this dark-eyed bridge man had been put in charge of the Cobalt Guard.
"Sir," Captain Kaladin said, stepping up, "I'm embarrassed. 1 week on the job and I failed you."
"You did as commanded, Captain," Dalinar said.
"I was commanded to keep you safe, sir," Kaladin said, anger bleeding into his voice. "I should have posted guards at individual doors inside your quarters, not just outside of the room complex."
"We'll be more observant in the future, Captain," Dalinar said. "Your predecessor always posted the same guard as you did, and it was sufficient before."
"Times were different before, sir," Kaladin said, scanning the room and narrowing his eyes.
He focused on the window, too small to let someone slip in.
"I still wish I knew how they got in. The guards heard nothing."
Dalinar inspected the young soldier, scarred and dark of expression.
"Why," Dalinar thought, "do I trust this man so much?"
He couldn't put his finger on it, but over the years he'd learned to trust his instincts as a soldier and a general. Something within him urged him to trust Kaladin, and he accepted those instincts.
"This is a small matter," Dalinar said.
Kaladin looked at him sharply.
"Don't worry yourself overly much about how the person got in to scribble on my wall," Dalinar said. "Just be more watchful in the future."
"Dismissed."
He nodded to Kaladin, who retreated reluctantly, pulling the door closed. Adolin walked over. The mop-haired youth was as tall as Dalinar was. That was hard to remember, sometimes. It didn't seem so long ago that Adolin had been an eager little boy with a wooden sword.
"You said you awoke to this here," Navani said. "You said you didn't see anyone enter or hear anyone make the drawing."
Dalinar nodded.
"Then why," she said, "do I get the sudden and distinct impression that you know why it is here?"
"I don't know for certain who made it, but I know what it means."
"What then?"
Navani demanded.
"It means we have very little time left," Dalinar said. "Send out the proclamation, then go to the High Princes and arrange a meeting. They'll want to speak with me."
The Everstorm comes.
62 days. Not enough time.
It was apparently all he had.